So today is the 17th of Tammuz. So the Talmud tells us there are five calamitous matters occurred to our forefathers on the 17th of Tammuz, and five other disasters happened on the 9th of Av. So what happened on the 17th of Tammuz? The tablets were broken by Moses when he saw that the Jews had made a golden calf. The daily offering was nullified by the Roman authorities and was never sacrificed again. When we say the daily Batel HaTamid, the daily sacrifice, that goes back. It started at the time of the revelation at Sinai, around that time. So you talk when the Jews are in the desert, they just came out of Egypt, they started a daily sacrifice called the Karban Tamid. And that went, it did not miss a day for hundreds and hundreds of years. It was only when the Romans invaded that the daily offering was nullified, which is like a horrible thing. You imagine for hundreds of years, the Jews were bringing the daily sacrifice, one in the morning, one in the evening, and it became nullified on the 17th of Tammuz. The city walls also of Jerusalem were breached. The general Posthumus publicly burned a Torah scroll. Now that Torah scroll that he burned was a scroll that had been given over by Moses himself. So you're talking about like the veracity of the Torah scroll, the five books of Moses, the Torah scroll that we have in our shuls today, the original one that was copied off of was burned by a Posthumus. So that was potentially something that was breaking the tradition. And the last thing was Menashe placed an idol in the sanctuary. So what the common denominator here, he sees that on the 17th of Tammuz, it starts with the breaking of the tablets by Moshe, which is, again, taking the tablets that were given directly from God, completely divinely inspired tablets, and he breaks them because we weren't deserving. We had sinned with the golden calf. But it breaks a transmission that was coming from God himself. You have this continuous daily offering that's broken by the Romans. The city walls are breached. The Torah scroll that has the tradition of directly from Moses, it ceases, right? He's burning this scroll, which has like basically it's the blueprint that we're using for everything. And the placing of an idol in the sanctuary by Menashe is also, again, like, think about it. You go into shul and you place an idol. It's like, completely runs counter to everything that it stands for. So five things that occur on the 17th of Tammuz is really the idea of breaking down the connection from the of tradition, of Masorah, of our connection to God, of to his transmission. All these things are occurring on the 17th of Tammuz. And then on the 9th of Av, it was decreed upon our ancestors that they would all die in the wilderness and not enter the Eretz Yisrael. That's after the sin of the spies. The temple was destroyed for the first time in the days of Nebuchadnezzar and the second time by the Romans. Beitar was captured, which was one of the largest cities, and the city of Jerusalem was plowed as a sign it would never be rebuilt. Okay, so those are the five and five. And this starts the beginning of a three-week period. Starts with the 17th of Tammuz and ends with Tisha B'Av. So now let's jump to the Shulchan Aruch. So he says that we are required to fast on the 9th of Av, on the 17th of Tammuz, on the 3rd of Tishrei, on the 10th of Tevet, because of the bad occurrences that occurred on these days. So now, I open up the Mishnah Berurah. Now that quote, this line over here, is coming from the Shulchan Aruch, which was written by Rabbi Yosef Cairo. We said his years were from 1488 to 1575. Okay? Now, we're going to go and look at the Mishnah Berurah. Mishnah Berurah was written by the Chavetz Chaim. Okay, let's take a look at this.
That's like your favorite guy.
We actually have pictures, but he lived from 1838 to 1933. So right, you can imagine the span here. We're going from the Shulchan Aruch, and now on the Shulchan Aruch you have the Mishneh Berurah, which is written by the Chavetz Chaim, and he's, I would call him, you know, he lived in, you know, there were people that actually, you know, got to see him, that are now, maybe today, very few that have, but you have people who witnessed, who had seen him. Okay, so look what the Mishneh Berurah says on this. So we are obligated to fast. This obligation derives from the words of the prophets as written in the scripture in Zechariah. Okay? In Zechariah, which is one of the last prophets, it says, the fast of the fourth, the fast of the fifth, the fast of the seventh, and the fast of the tenth. So this is talking about months. The fast of the fourth month, the fifth month, the seventh, and the tenth. Our sages, may their memories be up for a blessing, explain that the fast of the fourth is the 17th of Tammuz, since it's the fourth month according to the way we count our months. That is, and so that's that one. So that's the 17th is the fourth. The fast of the fifth is Tisha B'Av, since it is the fifth month. The fast of the seventh is the fast of Gedaliah, since it's the seventh month of Tishrei. And the fast of the tenth is the tenth of Tevet, since it is in the tenth month. Now, on all of these days, all Israel fasts because of the misfortunes that befell them on these days, in order to arouse their hearts to open up to the paths of tshuva, of repentance. This fasting will be a recollection of our evil deeds and the deeds of our ancestors, which were like our deeds now, such that they caused them and us these misfortunes, and in the recollection of these things, we will return to become better people, as it is written. And they will confess their iniquity and the iniquity of their ancestors. Therefore, each person is obliged to take to heart on these days to examine their deeds and to repent, to return, or the shuv of them, because of the fast itself is not the essential thing. Right, so here, if we're fasting, that's something that's going to hopefully bring us to return. As is written about the people of Nineveh, and the Eternal saw their deeds, that they repented, turned back from their evil path. The sages, may their memories be a blessing, said that their sackcloth and their fasting were not mentioned, just their deeds. So fasting is nothing but a preparation for repentance. Therefore, those people who, as they are fasting, go on walks or pursue trivial matters, grasp the issue of secondary importance, but loses track of the essence. So, but in any case, one may not exempt himself by means of repentance alone, because to fast on these days is a positive commandment from the prophets, as we wrote above. Right, so the idea is that it becomes an obligation. Now we have to do it, but the idea, the essence of what we're trying to accomplish here, is repentance. Now, on this issue of the things that occurred, so account of the terrible things, etc. Because on the 17th of Tammuz, five misfortunes occurred. On it, the tablets were broken as Moses descended from the mountain, as it is explained in the Torah. The daily offering was canceled and was no longer sacrificed in the first temple. The walls of the city of Jerusalem were breached in advance of the destruction of the second temple. The evil apostates burnt the Torah, and an idol was placed in the holy temple. So that's today. Shavuos HaRetamos is that these things. This idea of like breach, the idea of breaking the tablets, which really starts off and creates this real, you know, again, this breakdown of how things were supposed to be. And then when it comes to the 9th of Av, which is 3 weeks later, So on the 9th of Av, the great destruction occurred. The first temple was destroyed on that day, as was the second. And on the very day it was decreed that our ancestors were in the desert would not enter the land, which is really what occurs. The first thing that, if we're going to look at like these days, the 2 days, what really gets us is the first thing that occurs, and it kind of sets the the model for what things will occur after. So the 17th Tammuz is the breaking of the tablets, and the Tisha B'Av is the fact that we cried when the spies came back with their negative report about the land of Israel. And so that sets the tone. The 9th of Av becomes this horrible, tragic day because it started with us crying for no reason. God said, I'll give you a reason to cry, and you have the destruction of the temples, and a lot of bad things happen on Tisha B'Av. Okay, so now, let's just see here. Wanted to show you that this also begins a period of time, which we call the 3 weeks. Okay, so also one thing he does here that's which is interesting. So, okay. In the next, so you see over here it says Siman 549. That's like the chapter. So the next one is 550. Here he says the difference between the legal distinction that there is between Tisha B'Av and the other fasts. Okay? So all are obligated to fast on these 4 fasts, as forbidden to break the fence. However, so now look what he says here. It says Ramah. So now the Ramah is someone else. The Shulchan Aruch was written by Rav Yosef Kairo. Simultaneously, Rav Moshe Israelish was writing his own Shulchan Aruch. When he found out that there was already something that the Shulchan Aruch had been written by Rav Yosef Kairo, he instead took that text and inserted his ideas into the Shulchan Aruch. So today when we open up the Shulchan Aruch, we have Rav Yosef Kairo's writings and the Ramah. And the major like differentiator between them, or let's call it like the thing that sticks out, is that you have these two traditions, let's say. One is of Sephardic background and one is of Ashkenaz. And they have different minhagim, they have different customs, and also the way the halacha developed, there is a difference between the schools of thought. It's not consistently different, but there are many different times where you'll see that the way they decide the halacha will be a little bit different. And so you end up having these two parallel traditions that take form, and so you'll see different customs. This is a perfect example. The laws of the 3 weeks and the 9 days, and we call it the week that celebration of Tisha B'Av is Shavua Shechal Bo. Here is a perfect example of where you'll see the difference between Sephardic and Ashkenaz tradition. Okay, so Hugh, let's say, is married to someone that comes from a Sephardic background, right?
True. Yes.
All right. So, and here, but we're Ashkenaz background. So let's see how this is very interesting in terms of how this plays. Okay. So he says like this. He says, note, however, this is Ramah, those who are pregnant or nursing that are very distressed do not fast. Okay, fine. They have a dispensation. And even if they are not distressed, they are not obligated to fast. Rather, customarily, they are strict. But the truth is that when it comes to a woman that's given birth, who's nursing, that when it comes to these fast days, we are very lenient, except for Tisha B'Av. Tisha B'Av already we're very strict with, and also Yom Kippur. Okay, so now, let's see what he says here. These fast, except for Tisha B'Av, one is allowed to wash, anoint, wear shoes, and have marital relations. And it is unnecessary to stop from eating when it is still day. In the case of the 3 fasts, when it is still night, and the fast has not started yet. So, for example, okay, so what's he saying here? When it came to the fast today, Shavuos or Tammuz, If it was like Tisha B'Av, then when it becomes when sunset, when the I'm sorry, when yeah, when the sun sets, we stop eating. That's Tisha B'Av. Yom Kippur is the same thing. We start the fast at night, and then we fast for 25 hours, basically. When it comes to the fast of Shavasot B'Tamuz, the one that we're involved in today, the fast started at 4:14 this morning. You were able to eat last night, no problem. When it came to making Havdalah, no problem. There's no fast. The fast does not begin until the morning. And the morning is, it's starting from 4:14 let's see, what was 4:14? Tell you, 4:14 means, here.
The official sunrise, no?
No. No, so sunrise was not till 5. Today's sunrise. So the fast started. It's interesting. It didn't start, it's not dawn. Sunrise was at 5:20 something, 5:28. Okay? So it's the fast started, so it's not coming up in my thing anymore. I wonder if it's Mishayak here, which is here. Let's see here. Oh, it wouldn't bring it down. Whatever it is, but it's 4:14. Now, what exactly that time was? It was probably a little bit after dawn, because dawn. Yeah, those we went through this in the past, but the different points of when things are happening in the morning, right? So, first thing you have is you have a little bit of light. But that's not sunrise. Sunrise is when the sun comes over the horizon, and before that, there's light out. That's the when you start seeing light. That's already you're seeing the dawn, right? And then sunrise is almost, depending on how it's like almost an hour later. I don't know if the depending on where you are, but either way. So today the fast started at 4:14, and then it ends at nightfall. Okay, so but the difference here, right, the first things first is the difference between today and Tisha B'Av, and really Tisha B'Av and Yom Kippur have the same, we call the five Inuyim. You can't wash. You can't anoint yourself. You can't wear shoes that have leather. And can't have marital relations. That's Tisha B'Av. But on a day like today, you can take a shower, you can brush your teeth. So all these things, that's very different in terms of what Tisha B'Av is. Tisha B'Av already, it's a different story. Now, okay, another thing. All four fasts, if they fall on Shabbos, they are pushed to after Shabbos. Okay, the Ramah adds in, if they fall on the eve of Shabbos, let's say it comes out on a Friday, we read in the morning and the afternoon prayers, the parsha of Vayechal. If there is a wedding on the day of a fast on the eve of Shabbos, the custom is to pray in the afternoon prayers and read Vayechal, and then afterwards do the chuppah ceremony. Okay, fine. On the Shabbos before a fast, the community representative announces the fast, except for Tisha B'Av and Yom Kippur and the fast of Purim. Okay, fine. Now let's see here. Here we go. Here's where we see this idea of the 3 weeks. Now this is again, we said there's the Shulchan Aruch, there's Rav Yosef Kairo, and there's the Ramah. So here we go. Laws of the week of Tisha B'Av falls within and in it the 18 paragraphs. Okay, when one enters the month of Av, we reduce in joy. Okay, so that's actually pulling from the Gemara over here. So I'm jumping here. The Talmud says in Tanis 26b, says not only does one fast on the ninth of Av, but from the when the month of Av begins, one decreases acts of rejoicing. Then the Talmud. This is. Let's just look. We're going back before the halacha of the Shulchan Aruch is all based on the. It's derived from the Mishnah and the Gemara. So now, here's the Gemara. So during the week in which the ninth of Av occurs, it is prohibited to cut one's hair and launder clothes. But if the ninth of Av occurs on a Friday, on Thursday, these actions are permitted in deference to Shabbos. On the eve of the ninth of Av, a person may not eat two cooked dishes in one meal. Furthermore, one may neither eat meat nor drink wine. Okay? Rabbi Shimon Gamliel said, one must adjust and decrease the amount he eats. Rabbi Yehuda obligates one to overturn the bed and to sleep on the floor like one is in a state of mourning. But the rabbis did not agree with him. Okay? So now, in this, I just want to go over this again, because you're going to see the halacha is not necessarily, the way our customs are a little bit different than what the Talmud says. At least we'll see from the Ashkenazic perspective. So the idea of that when the month of Av comes in, Mishenichmas Av and Matin B'Simcha, one decreases acts of rejoicing. Then he has this idea of what we call Shvo Shechavo. During the week in which the ninth of Av occurs, you're not allowed to get a haircut or launder clothes. And then he says, but if the Tisha B'Av comes on a Friday, so then Thursday, you could do these things. Okay, now let's see the halacha. Halacha. Shulchan Aruch. When one enters the month of Av, we reduce in joy, like the Talmud said. And a Jewish person that has to him a legal dispute with a Gentile, one should delay from adjuring it delay from it because there is bad mazel. Okay, so now, that's an interesting idea. So now he's telling us that we're entering, when we go into the month of Av, and you have a court case, you're better off trying to push it off at this point in time in the month of Av at the beginning, because it's an ominous time for the Jewish people. Okay? Mm. Next. Here comes the Ramah. Ramah says, a bris milah that is from Rosh Chodesh Av until Tisha B'Av, we are accustomed that the Moel, the father of Baal Bris, the one who holds the baby, okay, we call him the Sandik, and the father of the son wear Shabbos clothes. Okay? So they should. But otherwise, he's saying basically, the custom seems to be that from the beginning of Av, a person wouldn't wear their nicer clothing. But beside for this, it is forbidden even on Shabbos Chazon, that's the Shabbos before Tisha B'Av, right? The Shabbos prior to Tisha B'Av. We do not switch to wear Shabbos clothes except for undergarments. Now, that's interesting. So he's saying, basically, there's something going on with how one, what kind of clothing we wear from the, he's couching it from the beginning of Av till Tisha B'Av, 9 days, that we're not going to wear freshly laundered clothing. Okay? Now, but we do spread the Shabbos parochas covering. So the idea of like how we would, here he says, the sheet of cover in front of the Aron with the Torah scroll. So like, basically, when you walk into shul, you have what we call the parochas, you have the curtain there in front of the ark. So you'll notice there are customs that when you go into a shul on Tisha B'Av, they'll have it pulled back as a sign of mourning. So here he says, when it comes to Shabbos, okay, you'd put it there. Except if Tisha B'Av falls on Shabbos and is pushed off, then we not spread the Shabbos parochas covering. Okay. So they have this idea of special covering. They would put the special covering on Shabbos, and when it came to this time period, they didn't. One who's marrying the week of Shabbos Nachamu is allowed to wear Shabbos clothes on Shabbos Chazon. Okay, now. Okay. So now, again, we said that the Gemara said, from the beginning of Tisha B'Av, I'm sorry, from the beginning of the month, we decrease our joy. Now here comes the halacha. From Rosh Chodesh until the fast, we minimize business transactions and building of joy. Example, the wedding house for his son, or the building of modeling and decorating. So the idea, like, comes the first of Av till Tisha B'Av, the 9 days. One should really, if you have a building project, you should put it on pause. Okay? Or Joyce planting, example, a royal banqueting canopy that is planted for shade, the stand in its shade, or types of myrtle and other tents. If its wall is leaning to fall, even though it is of joy, it is permitted to build, and for the needs of a mitzvah, all is allowed. Okay, so basically, in general, you shouldn't do things that are going to increase joy. Building for joy is not something you should do from the 9th of Av until, from the beginning of the month, I'm sorry, till the 9th. Now, so far, what we have is, the Gemara is telling us that it's the month of Av that you have all this kind of sadness, lack of joy. You're going to do things in a way that's going to be symbolic of the fact that we're not happy. We won't even go to a court case, so there's a bad mazel from the beginning of the month till the 9th. Now, and also it said something about the idea that you shouldn't get a haircut on the week that Tisha B'Av comes out, okay? So now, we do not wed women, and we don't have weddings, and we not make engagement meals, but engaging without a meal is allowed. God, I'm not sure what that means. The translation's not good here. Let's see what it says in Hebrew. Ve'ein osin nashim, ve'ein osin su'udas erusin. You're allowed to get engaged. You're just not allowed to make a party. You're not allowed to make engagement parties, okay? That wasn't really translated well, okay? So even on Tisha B'Av itself, it's permitted to engage that one is not proceeding. Reading, if you're worried that someone's going to, you know, you're going to lose your love, you know, you love your life because someone might propose. So even on Tisha B'Av, you'd be able to step up and do the, you know, you want to marry me? Good. All right. Then we'll celebrate after. Okay. Right? Afil b'tisha b'av, atzma mutter li'aris shalo yikad menu acher. Fine. Now, comes the Ramah. Our custom is to be strict, that we do not wed from 17th of Tammuz and on until after Tisha B'Av. Okay? So comes the Ramah, and he just expanded in one line. He says, okay, wait a second. All this stuff that you were talking till now about from the beginning of the month of Av, I'm rolling it back. So it's not 9 days, but now it's going to be 21 days. That now the restriction of getting married and having celebrations is not from just the beginning of the month, but I'm going to say it's from the prior day, prior month, 17th of Tammuz, all the way through to Tisha B'Av. So the idea of the 3 weeks, the Ramah comes down in one line and tells us, we expand this period of time. Okay? Now, look at this. So now again, this is back. It's interesting. It's going back and forth between the Shulchan Aruch, Rav Yosef Cairo, and the Ramah. So now we're back to the Shulchan Aruch. The week that Tisha B'Av falls in. Okay, so now, here, what the Shulchan Aruch is going to do is he's going to tell us that the actual, we call it Shavuot Shechalba, the week of Tisha B'Av itself. So let's see something here. You know, Tisha B'Av this year will come out on a Sunday. Do I have a calendar? Do I have a good Hebrew calendar? Let's see. That's not what I wanted. No. Ay. Okay. This should work. Okay, here we go. Great. So look at our calendar here. So we just did, is this the right thing? Yeah. So here we have this was our parasha, Tammuz, right? So here it said the fast began at 3:38, which would be dawn. Okay, so then it started at dawn. I had a different time on my calendar, 4:14. Not that it mattered. I wasn't.
Could it also have to do with where the calendar is being written from?
No, this is based on. Although that's a good question, because he's using. Here, let's see. You're right. Let's see.
It says New York. So.
It says New York. Yeah, perfect.
Just, I'm just laid up for New York.
Yeah, yeah, fine. So, okay. So you have, okay, next, let's jump into July. Okay, look at this. So you see, here, 21, 22, this is Tammuz, okay? And then, so Rosh Chodesh Av will be on the 10th of July, okay? And then Tisha B'Av is going to come out on Sunday. So, this year, what's the Shvur Shechal Bo of Tisha B'Av is none. It would be different, for example, if Tisha B'Av came out like on the 15th here, on July 15th, so then the whole week would be from Shabbos, Sunday, but that would be called, this whole week would be the Shvur Shechal Bo, the week that it comes out on. But when it comes out on a Sunday, like this, it's really just Shabbos, it's the first day of the week, it's like there is no Shvur Shechal Bo. You understand what, you know what I'm saying? Or let me get a different.
Yeah, it's because Shabbos is the week. They're saying it's the week from Shabbos to the following for the week.
This is the, here. Look. This is. Ooh, this is interesting. Next year, Tisha B'Av comes out on a Shabbos, but we don't keep it on a Shabbos, it gets pushed off. But that would be interesting. I wonder like how it works. Would they look at this as the week that it came out on, because Tisha B'Av was on Shabbos, this whole week would have the restrictions of a
Heracles.
You know what I'm saying? Okay, fine. But let's go back to this. Let's look at what the halacha is, okay? The week that Tisha B'Av falls in, it is forbidden to get a haircut or laundry, even if he does not want to wear now, rather to place until after Tisha B'Av, or even if he only has one garment, is forbidden. Okay? So when Tisha B'Av falls, the week that, according to the Shulchan Aruch, that week, you can't get a haircut, and you can't laundry your clothing. You can't wear freshly laundered clothing. And similarly, previously laundered garments, whether to wear or whether to make the bed, even hand and table towels, is forbidden. I mean, you can't launder and you can't use freshly laundered stuff, okay? Our washing is permitted, but Geyot's explanation, as we pass on clothes on a rock to smooth the clothing of ours, is forbidden. Okay, so this idea of like how exactly they used to have to work very hard in terms of laundering, so there would be, so he's describing the different levels.
Is this the thing where, like, I've seen guys, like, take fresh clothes, launder for that weekend, is like, dump them on the floor, and then they're suddenly clean?
Correct. Or that it's now dumped on the floor, it's no longer freshly laundered.
Right, so even, you know, the laundry, you put them on the floor for a second, now they're no longer freshly
laundered. Correct. Or they would put it on beforehand, just for a second, so that they get past this issue, right? Okay, so now, okay, the custom is to, okay, so we're getting to this whole, like, thing about, like, a breakdown in terms of what the difference between the type of laundering is. Okay.
Looks like they're talking about, like, ironing, not ironing, and stuff like that.
But either way, he's just good. This whole point here is just, like, he's getting into, like, there's a difference between exactly the format or how they would launder, like, makes a difference. But either way, let's go, I'm jumping here to the Ramah. So what he says is like this. We are accustomed to be strict in all of this from the beginning of Rosh Chodesh until after the fast, unless the need of a mitzvah, like women to wear white, it is allowed to launder and wear whites and fold underneath her. That's the exception. But with the Ramah's expanding, so Ramah's coming and saying like this, because if you look at the Shulchan Aruch said, the week that Tisha B'Av falls is where you can't get a haircut or launder. Comes along the Ramah, he says, this is actually starts from the beginning of the month of Av. Okay? So he just expanded it, the idea of not getting haircuts, to start from not just from the week that Tisha B'Av comes out, but the entire month of Av, so the 9 days. Okay? And then it's only after the fast that it's permitted to get a haircut and laundry immediately. If Tisha B'Av falls out on a Sunday or Shabbos and is pushed off out and off until after Shabbos, is permitted for both weeks. Whether before the fast or after. There are those who say that the custom to forbid the whole week except for Thursday or Friday. And here comes the Rama again. We are accustomed to be strict from the beginning of Rosh Chodesh in the matter of laundering, but haircuts are, we are accustomed to be strict from the 17th of Tammuz. So here comes the Rama again. Rama is saying that when it comes to the haircut thing, the whole time from today, from the 17th of Tammuz until Tisha B'Av, not supposed to get a haircut. Okay? So he took and made it the 3 weeks. The original thing is the week the Tisha B'Av comes out. He also expanded and said it's definitely from the beginning of the month, not so it's the 9 days. And so he creates the 9 days. So we have a 9-day period, we have a 21-day period, the 3 weeks. The Rama seems to say that these things are expanded, it's much larger. The only thing that, so what would be the 9 days? According to Rama, the 9 days is the issue of laundry, right? So when it comes to laundry, it starts from the 9 days, from the beginning of the month, okay? So we are accustomed to be strict from the beginning of Rosh Chodesh in the matter of laundry, but haircuts, we're accustomed to be strict from the 17th of Tammuz. What we'll also go into this is the idea of the weddings. We're not going to have weddings from the 17th of Tammuz today until after Tisha B'Av. Okay?
How did it come to pick out haircuts and laundry? Like there's so many things.
So where's this coming from? Okay, so what is going on here? So the answer is, we're talking about avelus, about mourning. So our model is avelus, like when unfortunately, if someone loses a relative, and you have to, and you're sitting, and you're in mourning, so you can't get a haircut during that period of time, and you can't, when you're in the deep mourning, you're not changing clothing. You're wearing the same clothing. You're not really supposed to bathe for a pleasure. So the idea of mourning. And there are different levels, and there are different periods of mourning. So, for example, you have the 7 days, you have Shiva, you have 30 days, and you have the 12 months, right?
So, Seam and the cottage, yeah.
Right? So, the 7 days of Shiva would be, the laws that you're going to apply there are going to be used for Tisha B'Av itself. So, Tisha B'Av itself will have those laws. Then you have the 30 days. You're not supposed to get a haircut for 30 days. I'm trying to think if it's even more than that. But definitely 30 days, right? So that idea of the Shloshim period is going to be transposed onto either, here we're going to say the 3 weeks, according to the Rama. According to the Shulchan Aruch, it's going to be a lesser period, right? It's going to be the Shvuah Shechalva, right? So that when it comes to the Sephardic tradition, it's going to be a shorter period based on the way the Gemara reads, right? And the way the Shulchan Aruch paskins, Rav Yosef Kairo is going to have it as a smaller window, right? Whereas the Rama expands it to 3 weeks of haircut, no haircut, and then for the in terms of the custom of not laundering stuff, that will be the 9 days. Okay? Whereas when it comes to the Sephardic tradition, it will be the week that Tisha B'Av comes out. Now, in terms of making weddings, I don't know, I'm not sure exactly if, I know that, I don't know what the custom is in terms of the Sephardic tradition, whether or not they would be making weddings during the 9 days. I doubt it. I doubt that it would be, because again, it's clear, actually, I would say, when you read the Gemara, Right? The Gemara says from the time that the month of Av comes in, we decrease the acts of rejoicing. And then the Gemara says it's on the week of the ninth of Av, it's prohibited to cut one's hair and launder clothes. Right? So that's the Gemara. And the Shulchan Aruch is Rav Yosef Kaira is being much closer to that. But clearly, from the beginning of the month, we're reducing the joy. So everybody would say, no weddings from the beginning of Av. Now, well, just as a juxtaposition, just so you see the Gemara here, is that the 9th of Av is the saddest, darkest day of the year. It's the 15th of Av that's actually the happiest, one of the happiest days. So you're going from the 9th to the 15th, we transition very quickly. The Gemara says here, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel said, there were no days as joyous for the Jewish people as the 15th of Av and as Yom Kippur. As on them, the daughters of Jerusalem would go out in white clothes, which each woman borrowed from another. And this whole idea of looking for a mate, and they would dance, etc. But you see this amazing thing that you're going from the 9th of Av, which is the darkest, 6 days later, on the 15th of Av, becomes one of the happiest days in the Jewish calendar. Tu B'Av. Now, what happened on Tu B'Av is it says that during the years of the Jews were in the desert, every Tisha B'Av, that's when people died. They would go out, they would dig graves and lie in their graves. And those who died, they covered it over, and the rest of the people had another year. So that went on for 40 years, for the 38 years that they were in the desert dying off. Comes that last year, 9th of Av, people dig their graves, they're sitting in there, they wake up in the morning, they said, maybe made a mistake. So they go back on the 10th, the 11th, 12th, 13th, 14th. On the 15th, there was a full moon. So then they knew for sure that they survived. That was the 15th of Av. So that became the happiest day, because then they realized that they had been spared from the decree of those that were supposed to die off in the desert. So that's like the beginning point of when the 15th of Av became a happy time. And then we have this custom of where the women would go out in their white clothes and they would dance, they were looking for a shidduch. Yeah, this very interesting Gemara about how they would go out, but there's a lot more to this story about the idea that there were different points in our history where the different tribes would intermarry, and so it came to an end on the 15th of Av. There was also this crazy story with Yiftach, and he ended up making some. He swore that the first person would come out. First thing that would come out after his military victory would be given to God as a sacrifice. Ends up his daughter comes out, and there's this whole terrible thing that occurs there of a loss, a tragedy in terms of a young maiden. So Tu B'Av is the time when all that's reversed. So the idea of going from complete darkness to joy in a short period of time, so that the month of Av comes in. Think about this. It started and said that the month of Av comes in, we're supposed to be sad. We're supposed to have a decrease in joy. But by the mid-month, it turns and becomes positive. So, pretty unbelievable. So, a couple of things, just to summarize. You see that here is a couple of things. One is, the idea of fasting in Judaism is it's supposed to be conducive to doing tshuva. That ultimately, what we're trying to do is to do something that's going to make it conducive for us to refocus and to really, like, you know, take note of where we can improve in our lives and get closer to God during these days, during these times. The fact is, historically, from the 17th of Tammuz to the 9th of Av, a lot of bad things occurred. Really painful things to the Jewish people. And so, it's a time when you know, especially when the ninth of when the sorry when Rosh Chodesh Av starts, it's a time of decreased joy. It's a time of, you know, a negative mazel. And so, you know, it's a time to really recalibrate, to be able to say, okay, why did these things go badly for us, and what can we do to improve? And let's say, for example, the destruction of the temples were caused for the fact that we weren't good to each other. This temple is still not, we didn't get a temple rebuilt after the second destruction, which was primarily for the fact that we didn't treat each other properly. So one of the things
we're both temples were destroyed on the same day.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, that's ridiculous. That's crazy.
What's interesting really about that is that, so we would say the way the Gemara looks at it is it says that it clearly there's something about a certain days in the calendar, the energy of those days that are conducive to certain things. The negativity of the day of the Tisha B'Av is such that it's conducive to this type of destruction. The truth is that the 17th of Tammuz, the breaching of the walls, the first time around was on the 17th. The other one might have been on the 9th, but we just automatically push it to the 17th. So there you see that it didn't necessarily fall out exactly. But when it came to Tisha B'Av, the destructions end up coming out both on the same day, because that day was just like conducive to that. So either way, if it was exact or not, that's how we look at it, as Tisha B'Av is the day where all these bad things seem to happen. And so the idea for us today is, when we get to these periods of time, especially in the last X amount of months where we had all these like horrible tragedies occur. Just now we had this horrible thing in Florida. You see these things and you say, you know, we talked about this on Friday night. We don't know why, but it's a wake-up call. And it's supposed to it's supposed to arouse us to be able to like say, okay, you know, let's take note of where can we individually improve. We can look at our communal things as well, but let's just say keep it simple to ourselves and try to figure out ways that we can become better people. And then, you know, so then we see also, just as a side, we saw here this interesting dichotomy, or I guess the different way that the halacha, in terms of just the Sephardic and the Ashkenazic backgrounds of how they the practice around this time period of the 17th of Tammuz to the 9th of Av and the beginning of the month of Av, and how the different traditions play out. It's kind of interesting. It's a kind of a parenthetical. It's just interesting to see how they play. But everybody agrees the 9th of Av, when Rosh Chodesh Av starts, that's a kind of a, that I think both are clearly saying that this is a time when you know, we're supposed to reduce our joy. And then the beauty of it is also, the flip side is that 15 days later comes the happiest time. So that we see this idea in Judaism that we have, you know, we can be very sad, it can be very, you know, horrible things, but we also have incredible, you know, things can turn very quickly, and from 6 days later, going from the saddest point of the year to the happiest point of the year, it's pretty unbelievable how that can be juxtaposed. But that's how we see things, that we can make those that type of shift very, very quickly. And so that the idea is that from the darkest place, you can come to the highest and the happiest place in a very short period of time, which is, I think, a source of comfort to know that that's possible. So so as we enter this period of time, you know, we should look at it as, how do we turn it around so that it becomes historically, we said today, this morning, that in Slichot it said, we pray that it should go from being a sad point in time to becoming a time of tremendous joy. So that when Av comes in, we should be blessed that it should become the happiest time of the year. Not just from the 15th of the day, 15th of the month, but from the